before us seems always to be in here until 4:30, and so we had to push our way in. We'll be talking to Chair Thiessen about making sure we have enough time for us to get in here. A couple of things. We need approval of the minutes. Representative Bly, have you had a chance to look at your minutes?
I have, Chair Slawick, and I move that we approve the minutes.
Representative Bly moves approval of the minutes for February 11th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the minutes for February 11th are approved. I have quorum. Okay. Now, for today, we're going to do several things, members. We're going to have first a presentation of the QRIS Scaling Options Report. Then we're going to have a presentation of MD and DHS on their QRIS Systems Framework Work Plan. They have a work plan in place. And then we're going to hear a bill, which happens to be my bill. So Vice Chair Rosenthal will be taking over at that point. And that it's about providing money for QRS, basically federal money that we have that we can use for state purposes. In your packet, I want to call to your attention, there's two things. There is an email from a family provider in Parent Aware that couldn't attend last week, so she has emailed the committee. And there's a flyer for Child Care Works. It's not in there?
It's not in there yet.
Okay. You'll be getting a flyer on Child Care Works Community Conversations on QRIS in Anoka in March. And I know Representative Peterson's gone on some of those. If you're interested in going, I think we will get you the flyer, and we'd encourage everybody to participate so you can see directly what the providers are saying. Next, Barb Yates, are you ready even without the PowerPoint? Can you wing this?
Do my best.
Okay. Well, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And this is the Scaling Options Report. Are you going to explain, basically the Kellogg Foundation, there was some money that they granted to bring a group together to talk about scaling QRS. There were no legislators on that group. Our connection through the Early Childhood Caucus, Lisa Venable was there as the staff to the Early Childhood Caucus. We saw it probably a month ago or so. Just a little heads up, it is very technical, a little bit overwhelming. Give yourself a day or two or three to absorb what it really means. And it's not saying we're going to do this or we're going to do that. It's really to give you ideas of what other states have done and some options in terms of funding. So it's really very interesting to have a outside group look at. They looked at the QRS pilot and then looked at some other states, and she will talk more about the design elements. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Yates, and I work for Resources for Child Caring, which is the resource and referral agency serving the Summit County metro area. Madam Chair, that's the worst introduction I've ever had for a presentation. You said it's overwhelming and technical and...
Well, I was trying to make it so that in case the members are kind of like, huh, you won't be, you know, well, it's going to sink in and you're probably going to get some phone calls.
That is absolutely fine. I'd be happy to take those calls. Madam Chair, the report that I'm about to tell you about was something that was requested by the Early Childhood Caucus, and the folks approached me about convening a group of experts to try to figure out, to identify what issues needed to be addressed to scale the Minnesota Quality Rating and Information System, to develop two or three models for scaling with the pros and cons of each. And what we did was we convened a panel of experts to try to put this report together. We worked with Louise Stoney and Ann Mitchell, who many of you know of their work from the Alliance for Early Childhood Finance. They're national experts on financing a variety of early education and early childhood options. They do this all around the country, so we're very fortunate to have their expertise on this. We also had Jody Sanford from the Humphrey Institute, Scott McConnell, and Amy Sussman-Stillman from SEED at the University of Minnesota, Catherine Tout, Lori Davis from MELF, and then, as I said, Louise Stoney and Ann Mitchell were our national consultants. They were able to obtain some funding from the Kellogg Foundation to support the creation of this report.
See, the technology is kicking in.
We're getting perhaps there. I believe you do have a handout with the slides from the PowerPoint.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so do about 500 things. Okay. Basically, the goal was for us to provide the Early Childhood Caucus members of the legislature with financial models that you could use to determine the cost of implementing a statewide QRIS system. And as I said, the process, we used national experts with QRIS and finance knowledge, and it was supported by a local work group that knew about what was going on here in Minnesota as well. We had several guiding principles that we used, and that should be about the third slide. Good job. You can find the guiding principles one, which is about 3N. Okay, the first one is that the outcome focus that we used was to improve children's school readiness. That is the focus of the Minnesota Quality Rating and Information System, Parent Aware. It is also to empower parents. It's to be based on research, use available research, to value cultural relevance, to increase quality, and to link and leverage all the existing resources. And it was intended to be dynamic and responsive. Now, one of the first things I'm going to draw your attention to. Is the slide that's in your packet called the Design Elements and Trade-Offs. And I think you have this as a separate sheet as well, a one-pager. Now, first of all, one of the things I want to let you know is that even though we basically costed out three different models here, I want to be very clear. We are not suggesting that you should be implementing any of these three models, okay? This was merely to give you a way to build the cost model and to start looking at what kinds of things needed to be addressed. And the way we put that together was we costed out, if you took the Parent Aware pilot that's being done in the metro area and in Blue Earth and Nicollet counties, and if you scaled it as it's being conducted in the pilot, those are the costs that are here. Now, this pilot was never intended to be scaled using all those elements. We were trying to study all kinds of things so we could figure out some of the most cost-effective ways to be able to scale this project if it were to go to scale in Minnesota. So the cost there is not something that we're suggesting. If you want to do this in a very credible way, that you would have to spend that kind of money. So I wanted to be clear about that as we started. The other thing is the other two models are different models. We wanted to give you some different ways to be able to look at this and to understand how other states were working into it and what kinds of things we might want to consider in Minnesota if we were to scale this model. The design elements and trade-offs, there are basically six things. Well, I should back up. There are 22 other states that are doing quality rating systems of some kind. Those have mostly developed over the last 10, 12 years. Those have been emerging. And each of them have the six design elements. All quality rating systems that are currently being conducted have some version. They do this sometimes very, very differently, but they do have some version of these six elements. The first is quality assurance. We want to make certain that we have ways of determining whether or not the rating system is of quality, is measuring quality in programs, and whether we can demonstrate that. This is also in the Minnesota model, as we talk through it in a minute. In the pilot, that's one of the more costly elements that we have, and that's because we're doing a number of things looking at various assessment instruments that are being utilized, observational assessments, and we're doing it way more than anyone is doing it in any other state. For example, we're doing two observational assessments. We're using the CLASS and the ERS, E-R-S, Early Childhood Environmental Rating System. Thank you. And those two are being done because we are trying to study a variety of things and try to determine what's the best way to go about this, and they're being done every year. You would never scale doing that. You wouldn't need to do that with that level of intensity. We're doing that for research purposes to help inform the decisions that you may make as you go forward. The other is the data system. Generally speaking, we need a way of collecting all the data in the programs and to be able to have a way for parents and others to look at the ratings and to determine whether or not a program is of quality. The other element is supports for improvement. These are done in very different ways in different states and different geography, but basically all of the quality rating system have some form of supports for early educators and providers to improve their programming.
More technical difficulties, I think. Okay. It's too bad. Let's see if we can get this up. We may have to give up on it, I suppose, at some point.
Okay, if we can get to the design elements.
This one.
We may have it. Besides the supports for improvement, that usually may take the form of professional development for practitioners. It may be technical assistance for the actual program, like in a center or a school-based program or Head Start program, and it might be facility improvements. They also usually have some forms of incentives that are available, whether it's for the program, for the practitioners, or sometimes for consumers or parents. In Minnesota, in our version, there were grants that were available to programs or providers to help them do the things that they needed to do to increase the quality of the program. We also, for the incentives for consumer or parents, for part of the time of the pilot, the pre-K allowances were available. Or the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation was also piloting a scholarship program, so sometimes scholarships were available. Again, this is done in different ways in different places, but those are some mix of having some incentive and some resource to help build the quality in the program is necessary. Also, all of the quality rating systems across the country make use of some sort of communications, marketing, or outreach. And again, the cost of this can vary based on the goals of the specific quality rating system. And finally, evaluation is also a very significant component. In Minnesota, there's a very, very robust evaluation going on of the pilot. That is being entirely funded by private dollars. That's not being funded by state dollars. Most of those resources were grants to the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation from the McKnight Foundation. So they provided much of the resource for evaluating the quality rating system in Minnesota. Again, that's different in different places. I had the privilege of being in Washington a couple weeks ago at a national meeting where they brought people together to update them on what was going on with quality rating systems, and Minnesota is being held up as a model both because of the rigor of the evaluation that's going on with that system, as well as we're the first quality rating system in the country to be focused on school readiness. Now, the three options in the report that I mentioned to you, the first one looks at parent aware statewide, and again, the annual full cost implementation of that model would be over $50 million. And again, I want to remind you, we're not suggesting that that's the way that this should be. If you decided to take this to scale in Minnesota, that would be the cost associated with that. I think you have the full report in your packet as well. And on page 2 of the report, you can see some of the assumptions that we use to build this model. First of all, the assumption that gets you to that $50 million figure includes a 75% overall participation of center programs and 50% of family child care. That's a huge, huge take-up. Probably there's maybe one or two states that have been going for the longest, had a lot of resources available to help programs increase quality. I think I think Pennsylvania is perhaps the only one, there may be one or two others, except for North Carolina, and that one's a little bit different, that have that participation level. So one of the things that as you were costing, what we were trying to do is to make sure that you had a cost model so you could look at and make the decisions on what would be possible in Minnesota, that you could decide what are the elements, based on the research again, that you think would be most useful in terms of scaling this program and that would get us the level of quality that we desire, and you could determine what would be the take-up or how long. So if you had X dollars, it may take us 3 years to scale up or 5 years, or you may decide to scale up in various geographies, or you may want to focus on children from low-income families. Different states step into it differently, and that's certainly something, again, in these difficult financial times that you would want to consider. The second state that we looked at was North Carolina, and the cost of the program in North Carolina. And again, these costs are based on looking at the kinds of dynamics we have in Minnesota. So if we were doing that kind of model here, based on the number of individual family child care providers and centers that we have, what would it look like to try to scale up that kind of model? North Carolina model, we'll talk about that in just a minute, it's a little bit different. All programs in North Carolina participate in the quality rating system. It's not voluntary like the one that we have in Minnesota or that most states have, but that's because they build it with their licensing system, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. And then finally, the third state that we put to give you a frame on this discussion was Maine, and they spent a little over $9 million, almost $10 million with the project that they have in Maine. The Maine project has almost none of the quality assurance measurements, for example, that we use in Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Ward, we have a question. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that I can get this straight in my mind, you looked at similar characteristics of programs in Minnesota, North Carolina, Maine, across the board, and if North Carolina, Maine had a program like Minnesota's, that's what it would cost. For the North Carolina has 8,820 regulated homes and regulated centers, and Maine has 2,370 regular homes and regular centers.
That's correct.
And so the cost of those facilities for a Minnesota-style program would equal what it says there, $60 million to $9
million? Correct.
So, I mean, my question is, why such a variation of, you know, with 13,677 regular homes and centers in Minnesota, it's $50 million for less then, you know, let's say half of that in North Carolina, it's $60 million. Maine is... Oh.
Excuse me. I think I said that. I must have said that backwards. What I'm trying to say is that what they did was they took the costs from each of these two states, but they applied those as if we're looking at the elements in Minnesota. Okay.
Excuse me, Representative Ward, what are you looking at? What page are you on? I just want to...
I'm looking at page 2, Madam Chair.
Okay.
And maybe I'm on the wrong page.
No, that's correct. It's...
It is true that the Maine model is a lower-cost model, and the North Carolina model is a higher-cost model than what we've contemplated in Minnesota.
Madam Chair, I'm just looking at page 2, and then slide the QRS 3 options slide and trying to equate the costs to a Minnesota-style program compared to the number of regulated homes and centers, because they don't really. I mean, there's 13,677 in Minnesota for a total cost of $50 million, and North Carolina there's 8 million. I mean, 8,000, and Maine is 2,000. So I'm wondering what the difference there.
Financial
costs are different. Why are they so different?
Right. Representative Ward, good question, Ms. Yates.
Yeah, if we could keep going here, I think that will get clear in a minute.
Okay.
But it is as if we were doing the North Carolina program in Minnesota with those programs, it's how you get the $60 million figure. Okay?
We do have another question. And members, I have to tell you, I mean, Ms. Yates said I gave the worst introduction. I found this...
But accurate.
Yeah, I found this difficult. So, I mean, some of the... To actually get through this, so don't be surprised if you're having a little bit of difficulty, and it takes a while for us to wrap our minds around exactly what it does mean. Representative Kulik Jackson.
Just to clarify, maybe this will help with Representative Ward, too. These costs are not to bring the Minnesota model to Maine. It's to bring the Maine model to Minnesota. So if Minnesota ran it like Maine, it would cost us $9 million.
That would be correct.
If we ran it like North Carolina, it'd be $60 million. Okay, great.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for helping me, Representative Jackson.
Ms. Yates, if you look at option one on the parent aware model, I'm going to go through just quickly what the elements. Remember, I said there are six elements that apply to all the different models, and I'm going to go quickly through what those elements look like in the parent aware model in Minnesota. Quality assurance, as I said before, they're annual on-site observations of every program. The supports in the Minnesota model, there are no professional development, facilities improvement, or practitioner incentives within the quality rating system. There is what's called, what they've referred to in this report as directive technical assistance. That means we made assistance available to all the programs that wanted to go through the system. They were assigned someone to work with them to provide them with technical assistance to get through the process. As I also had stated before, there were quality grants were made, and those averaged approximately $2,400 per program. Those were grants that often were used to do things like either purchase or get training on curriculum, to learn how to use assessment instruments, those kinds of things. So in the incentives in Minnesota that were used, at least for part of this model, for 1 year of it, it were pre-K allowances. Those did operate in the pilot areas. And then we will have about a year and a half of the model operating without those. So we'll be able to see if there are any differences by utilizing those or not utilizing them. And again, one of the things that's unique about the model in Minnesota is its explicit focus on school readiness. Okay. Some of the pros and cons for this model. Again, we saw that one of what's considered one of the pros is that it is a focus on school readiness. It also builds on a pilot infrastructure and momentum that's already going, so you're not starting from scratch if you were to decide to go ahead with this some version of this model. Programs receive quality improvement reports. There are strong evaluation of outcomes going on. It is parent-focused as well. When the Parent Aware was being designed in Minnesota, I want to be clear, all elements of Parent Aware that we're rating programs on are based on existing research of what works to increase quality. One of the things that we also, as the program was being designed, we started asking other states, are parents actually using the quality rating system in your state to make decisions? And we found out that no one really knew whether parents were using the ratings to make their decisions. So part of the evaluation in Minnesota is to look at that very explicitly and say, will parents use this to help them make their decisions? And that'll need to be an ongoing part of the design, because we don't have enough programs yet where you can really measure that, but that's something that we'd want to watch over time. Some of the cons is that in Minnesota, the way that the quality assurance has been construed is the more expensive element in this program. The pre-K allowances were not renewed, so in terms of some of the incentives, that one is no longer available, so there's an open question about what kinds of incentives do we have enough in the system, are there enough things going on that are incenting providers to want to participate or not, and that'll be something we can watch in the evaluations. And again, whether it's pre-K allowances or other mechanisms for incenting, there are different ways that can be done. And also, the parent aware is still in being evaluated, and it has not yet been validated, the elements of that. That's going on right now.
Okay, we have a couple of questions. We'll do Representative Peterson and Representative Greiling. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the things that people continually get confused about, at least as I discuss it with people, is the outcomes. Is this program outcomes or student outcomes?
Ms. Yates?
It's a combination in the evaluation. And that's somewhat controversial, but the evaluation does both.
Can you focus on? I can understand. You know, why do you say it's controversial, and what kind of student outcomes are we looking at?
The student outcomes we're looking at are whether or not children are ready for kindergarten. And there are a variety of assessment instruments. And all the programs that go through the quality rating system do use child assessments with the children in the programs. The issue, what becomes sometimes controversial, is how you use those assessments and what do we know about assessing young children and how those are used. And you don't want to make those kinds of assessments, which include child development as well as some very specific things about literacy and math and those kinds of things. You don't want to set those up to be misused or to have children, you know, being unfairly labeled or whatever. So you want to be very, very careful about that. On the other hand, people want to know, are we getting any results from the research that we're putting towards early childhood? And we want to be able to know, are we in fact getting children ready for kindergarten? You know, one of the reasons why we started looking at quality rating systems at all goes back to the Itasca report that Governor Pawlenty asked them to look at early childhood programs and brought in McKinsey to look at it and said that we're spending, you know, a fair amount of money, although it's mostly by parents for child care, but we spend about $1.5 billion a year on early childhood, and we know very little about the quality of that that spend and what we're getting for that money. So in part, this is to help address that. I think the legislative auditor also did a report at the same time saying we have this money being spent. We don't have measures built into these programs that let us know whether they're being effective or not.
Thank you. That's a good explanation.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I could wait until we get to Maine, but just in case we don't, and reading ahead here, as long as Representative Ward got me to reading this very excellent, I think, report from Ann Mitchell and Louise Stoney. But I just wanted to comment that it says here that, you know, we looked at that chart on page 2, that Maine would be the cheapest of the three. But then I'm reading here, Maine doubles the state dependent care tax credit for parents who enroll their child in a Step 4 program. And here's the sentence: the cost of this tax credit was not included in the model because it is foregone revenue rather than an expenditure. That sort of statement would not fly with Representative Lencheski, mm-hmm. who doesn't talk about tax credits and deductions, but rather tax expenditures. You know, if you're giving out a credit, that is an expenditure. So I wonder then, if the Maine model would be so cheap if we counted the tax expenditures.
Ms. Yates?
You raise a good point, Representative Greiling, and that's there are actually some differences in all these models where there are different kinds of investments that have been made that are not included here that make it easier to do some of these models than it might be here. In Maine, I think they also have a pretty robust professional development system, where ours is more in its more beginning stages of development within Minnesota.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Yates, I'm curious about the kind of roll-up of costs here. Do you have like a more detailed spreadsheet behind these summary PowerPoints for us to see kind of how these costs roll up? I mean, I'm trying to do like just rough math in my head, and I can't do 75% of centers times 50% of home base times $2,400 in grants plus an annual on-site visit. Do you have kind of the details broken down so that we could see these cost factors without having to ask a million questions today?
Ms. Yates?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. There is a spreadsheet that has all of that laid out. I believe that fiscal staff here has been trained on how to use that from Ann Mitchell. She's the person. And I think that I'd be happy to sit down with the two of you and go through this if you like. We could also get Ann Mitchell on the phone. She's the expert on doing this. It's been done in a number of states. But yes, it'll allow you to go in and look exactly how that. It's an Excel spreadsheet, basically. And it has all of those elements placed in. And you can change those elements based on the decisions you make about how you want to implement. So you can see exactly what, if you did a shorter take-up, if you wanted, instead of doing annual observational assessments, if you wanted to do that every 2 years, you can plug those numbers in and see what the difference is and how you do this.
Representative Downing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is that what is in the back of the early childhood finance scaling options report? Is that?
My understanding is that it's a snapshot, but there is a more detailed.
Okay.
It's much more robust.
And so I think what we'd like to do, because we'd like to have Ms. Yates get through the rest of the report, and we scheduled about two more minutes for this, yeah. is do a follow-up with you on how to get that and how to walk through that. The beauty of this, all of this, is it is very technical, but then, you know, it's as you know, the numbers can be portrayed different ways. So trying to understand how they're used in this, I think, can be used. It's part of the good and the difficult part. So,
Madam Chair, it was intended to be a financial model that you could use. The report wasn't intended to be like a fiscal note for how you would implement. It's a model that you can use to determine the costs and to figure out how to do that. If I could go to the North Carolina model quickly, the quality assurance there, they streamline the standards, the supports. It builds on the state's very strong existing professional development and technical assistance infrastructure. Again, a lot of resource not included in the model was used to do the basis. They have what's considered responsive TA. I talked about in our model, it was considered more directive, more hands-on with someone to help you get through this one. Their model assumes that you will request assistance if you need it, so a program that maybe is pretty close to having high quality, doesn't feel like they need much assistance, could go ahead and work on their own and wouldn't need to have someone assigned or paid to provide that to every single program. Again, because this is built within the licensing structure, that's a bit different as well, though.
Ms. Chase, my CA informs me we actually have 10 more minutes. So if we can you try to get through? Can you
yes.
do it in 10 minutes?
I'll do my best.
Okay.
The incentives, there are wage subsidies for providers and tiered reimbursement linked to ratings. They have 100% participation, and as I said, it's linked to licensing. The pros, this streamlines costs by embedding QRIS in the overall early childhood education system within the state. The cons is the licensing-based system would not automatically include school-based programs in Minnesota. We don't license school-based programs. There's a significant shift from the parent-aware pilot model. The responsive technical assistance would be an example of that. The shared monitoring, provider and practitioner funding linked to QRIS. Minnesota also lacks North Carolina's existing early childhood education resources for technical assistance and for professional development. The main model is the third option that we looked at, and the quality assurance there is provider-directed with desk monitoring and online provider handbook. There is no independent observational assessment on the quality of the program through a regular quality assurance measure. The supports, they use responsive technical assistance also through existing providers. They have strong existing professional development system and the tax credits for facility improvements. And the incentives are quality bonuses to providers based on their ratings. The main model, the pros of this, it's the least expensive, it's the least arduous for providers, and that's mostly because they have a very good online system and with technical tutorials that can walk people through. It's very easy for them to use. Like Parent Aware, the QRIS is linked to Professional Development Registry. The cons are it's embedded in the state's professional development system, which is much stronger than what exists in Minnesota, and it requires stronger evaluation component to validate the connection between the ratings and school readiness. Basically, what they're doing in their evaluation is they will randomly go and do the observational assessments like we were talking about, but they don't do it on a regular basis with every program with that feedback going. It's part of their ongoing evaluation. Those are the three models that we looked at. Again, I would take you back to the design elements and trade-offs. The decisions to be made as you go forward is, I forget which representative raised it now, but is to look at the take-up is a big issue. You decide if you decide that you wanted to start scaling this, how would you start walking into that? What would be the take-up that you'd want to do across the state? And again, the one that's in there is very, very high. quality assurance. There is no way that anyone envisioned that we would be doing two observational assessments every year in every program. One way that you might do that is to do one observational assessment every 2 years, one every 3 years, the different ways of doing that. Or you might decide to have a model where you randomly do that and that you show up a periodic basis. There are different ways that could be done. I suppose in theory you could do it similar to Maine's as well and have it be as part of the evaluation for a period of time until there are more resources available to be able to do it more consistently. The data system cost of those are pretty much similar across the three systems. That would be, those costs are laid out in the financial model as well. Supports for improvement, that varies greatly, as do incentives. And again, as I said, in Minnesota, the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation is making a significant investment in the communications and marketing. Some of you may have been hearing that recently on NPR and some of the other radio stations to let people know about this. It's really the first time we started marketing it. We just have a few programs rated, so we need to get that more robust before we can see all of what that means. But I believe Melf will be giving you some results from that soon. And then finally, the evaluation. That's a very important component. Again, to make sure that we know that we're getting the results that we intend with doing this sort of program. One of the things that you've been asked about, given the difficult financial times and how do you step into this, one of the things that I'd remind you is that the elements in the quality rating system are all based on research. What we're trying to find out are the most cost-effective ways to scale this. We have a lot of research that tells us how to create, how to have quality and what kinds of things we need to do. The issue is to try to figure out what are the things that we need to be watching to make sure that we get the kinds of outcomes that we're looking for. One of the things I think that we've been finding very useful, and this has been some resources by United Way, Alina, Grotto, and that's what we've called our getting ready activities. We heard from our early educators and providers that they wanted assistance really focusing on getting curriculum and assessment a place in the programs. We know that that's important. We know that that needs to be done, and we know that many places don't have that. That's one of the biggest things that people are doing to get ready for the quality rating system. It's a worthy thing to do even if we didn't have a quality rating system. We have resource available, and you're going to hear from the state departments about some of this, to help us increase quality in our programs. Those are things we would be doing if we want to help get kids ready for kindergarten, even if we don't have a quality rating system.
Thank you. Members, I just want to talk a little bit about how this is kind of going to unfold, or some of the process it might take. I think that this is very helpful, but it does raise more questions about the design elements and whose responsibility is it to design the design elements. In the next presentation, MDE and DHS are going to talk about their work plan and how they're working through this. Then we're going to talk about a bill that's going to work on some of the QRS pieces. Really, I think the big picture is we're trying to figure out where we're going. There's some thought that the last evaluation of the last, we can't really do a program until we see the final evaluation. They're trying to get that evaluation to come out next fall, and so that by session, we would then have a bill on this. But I think until we see the evaluation, it's really hard to design all of the elements yet. If you haven't heard this, I know we're public here, there's talk of getting all the people that have a vested interest in this, so the Early Childhood Caucus, legislature, MELF, departments, United Way, Early Childhood Funders, in one room after session, and start to say, okay, whose responsibility is to do what? We know here at the legislature, the main thing, parts we do is we do funding, which right now is hard. We don't have a lot of extra funding. We also do policy. So what are the policies we want around this? But is there some private money for this? What does MELF bring to the table? Is there sunsetting? And for the evaluation, as it comes out, what kind of program do we want? I would say we're a long way from this. The Early Childhood Caucus and Representative Peterson, I look at you, has really struggled with this on where do you go after a report like this. But I think the good part is it's pretty wide open at this point, depending on amount of funding, who's going to take the lead, and how we're going to work through these decisions. So if there's questions on that, and then what I'd ask is, unless I have questions for you, to have the departments come up and get ready for you'll be on shortly. Representative Downey?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess maybe the same question I asked last committee hearing. So is there a do-nothing alternative in the kind of the decision tree here, or is the decision somehow already made to proceed with a QRIS? And as you know, I still have questions that as to whether we've substantiated through the MELF pilot that there is any real direct correlation between QRS and actual improvements in readiness, and also question whether or not there are alternative strategies besides just a statewide kind of publicly run program for that. And it feels to me like we still haven't answered that, and I've been kind of scanning the internet trying to find research that would substantiate it, and frankly the one piece of research seems to maybe indicate the contrary. So I'm from your perspective, are we beyond the decision point of whether or not, or is not doing anything still an option?
Well, Representative Downey, if you know, I teach a class in public policy, and not doing anything is always an option. You know, as the students will write different alternatives and weigh them, that's always on the table. And in this kind of environment, it could be a very real option that we will have to decide. As there are many stakeholders in this process, as the stakeholders get together, that's where some of the decisions are going to be have to made. And if the legislature doesn't have the funding, to someone else has it, but then where do those decisions fall? I think that we got your list of questions, and the members all have seen those. We'll be working our way through some of those in tonight's meeting as well as other future meetings, but I encourage you to keep, you know, you can ask questions and we'll get through the process, but I don't see anything really being decided. I mean, you see the kind of environment we're in. I would say next fall is going to become really important. Before the legislature, what would be introduced during the session, I think, will be the issue. And if there's, you know, funding and policies in place, and then if they're not. But I don't see this session we'd be making that decision as much as working through it. I think the Early Childhood Caucus would probably be working on it too. Did Representative Peterson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, but we do have it in statute that we will have a QRIS system and have funding tied to it. Now, what that looks like remains to be seen, you know, and it can take many different shapes and forms, and it has to be developed. But it is in statute. It was passed in the last year. So it is in statute. Now, could it be repealed? Yes, but I hope not, because what we have is nothing so far in terms of any accountability.
Representative Demme.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Peterson, I'm really hoping that the do-nothing alternative is still in the mix, and I appreciate that statutorily there may be a commitment to it, but just one person here on the committee, really uncomfortable with the maybe the concept in general and the lack of kind of concrete evidence that the statewide QRS is really the way to improve kindergarten readiness. So I just feel like we've gotten statutorily ahead of where we are operationally and in terms of really looking at the evidence. So I'm hopeful the chair's perspective on maybe leaving do nothing in the decision tree is still part of the mix.
Thank you. I think with that we're going to move forward. If the department can come down and we'll proceed with that. You'll see the department has a work plan, members, to flesh this out and figure out what some of the next steps are. As we know, with most of the things, if we pass a bill here, it's up to the departments to implement it. So we'll see what is in their work plan. Welcome to the committee. I think we have Ms. Swenson-Clack going first.
Well,
Ms.
We're
Carlson, gonna
change that.
If you'd like to go first, that'd be fine. Welcome to the committee.
As long as we're in the Olympic mood here, I'm going to do the short program before.
Oh. And we should
You'll
pass out
the... You for a few minutes.
If you want us to have scorecards, we could arrange that. We'll rate you against each other.
No, I believe that's
award
what we're
medal.
Doing, the quality rating system.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair and members, I'm Karen Carlson with the Department of Education, and I am here to sort of bridge the talk about the financial tool to help us figure out what QRIS costs to the work of the joint work group, which is really work that you set out in this statute that we just referred to, and you have a copy in front of you. And the work group is really grappling with the structure and the content of what the QIRS should look like not about the funding. So as you know, we have talked a lot about standards in this committee and in relation to the QIRS, and my job today is just to tell you that any QIRS will be built on two sets of interrelated standards. And I just want to clarify what the two sets of standards are and get everybody on the same page about how they're defined. So the first set of standards would be the child outcome standards, and these are like your K-12 academic standards. These outcome standards are what kids should know and be able to do given their age. And one of the things the work group's already done has, they have agreed to the definition that of child outcome standards that you'll find on this handout on page 2. And it reads, a common set of developmentally appropriate expectations for young children within a context of shared responsibility and accountability for helping children meet these expectations. So that's your child outcome standards. Sometimes we just call them child standards. Sometimes we call them early learning standards. And sometimes we call them early childhood indicators of progress, which are Minnesota's own title for their own standards. And we have two sets of those child standards. We, according to age, we have one set of standards for birth up to age 3, and then another set of standards for children ages 3 to kindergarten entrance. And then the work group has gone on to do some research from existing early childhood organizations and other states, and they have now agreed to the definition at the bottom of the page, which is the program standard definition. So program standards are defined as components and features of early childhood programs based on research that would support the child outcome standards that we just talked about. So it's kind of everything that gets the kid ready to have good outcomes. Make sense? Just check your definitions if you're so right now, the work group is working on identifying those components in all the program standards that relate to individual programs, like Head Start has, I think you heard, some 400 standards. Child Care has some licensing standards. School Readiness Program has their standards in statute. So we're looking at all those sets of standards, coming up with the elements that most help improve child outcomes to get kids ready for school. So that's the current work that's going on. So now Deb's going to take you through the plan in the longer program.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deb Swenson-Klatt with Department of Human Services, Child Development Services Unit, and members of the Department of Education, I'm a part of the work group as well, working on this framework to develop recommendations for this framework on a quality rating and improvement system. What might be helpful to do to provide an overview of the work plan is actually to look at the legislation in a little bit more detail, and you should have a copy in front of you. This legislation passed last year, directed the state to provide recommendations to you on the creation of a QRIS framework, and those recommendations are due to you about a year from now, on March 15th, 2011. So we are partway underway with this work, and just wanting to provide an update to you today on how we've structured the work of the work group and what else we've accomplished to date. The law outlines some of the features of a quality rating and improvement system framework that you would like to see addressed in the recommendations. And first, as Karen mentioned, the purpose of the statewide QRIS framework should be centered on improving educational opportunities for young children by improving the quality in early childhood settings. And in order to ensure that focus, the legislation directs us to first base recommendations on the Parent Aware pilot rating system and its evaluation results, which, as you have heard, are should be available fall of this year. And then a common set of child outcome standards that Karen just described and a common set of program standards. A second feature of the QRIS framework that we are attending to in the recommendations is its use as a tool to increase the supply of early learning programs that are of high quality. The legislation says specifically that the QRIS should be voluntary, and it also asks us to describe how a rating system and rated programs in the rating system will be linked to future state funding. And then a third feature of the framework is that it should be used to track progress toward increased access, especially on the part of low-income children, to high-quality early learning programs. And it should also be used to track progress in preparing children for kindergarten. In addition, the law more specifically directs us to include in recommendations that, again, that common set of child outcome and program standards that Karen just described, a plan to link all future state funding to the framework, and a plan for how to realign our state and federal administrative resources to support implementation of a framework. So that's essentially the task that's ahead of the work group. And as a first step towards developing these recommendations, we convened last summer. We drafted a work plan, a revised version of which is in front of you today. And Karen, in highlighting one important set of definitional tasks that we've already completed, lays the groundwork for some of the other objectives and tasks that are before us in the work group activities. Before I just highlight a few of those objectives and tasks, I just want to note two linkages that this work plan makes with other quality rating and improvement system planning activities in the state. First, the Governor's Early Childhood Advisory Council and its Early Learning Standards Committee have expressed interest in the development of common program standards. And in its application for some stimulus funding that is available to all state advisory councils that will be submitted soon, the council proposes support for portions of this work plan in order to ensure the development of common program standards. And so if you look on the work plan itself, you'll see a column on the right-hand side called Uses ERA Funding, and that's the place where you can see in the work plan where this ERA funding from that flows through the Early Childhood Advisory Council will support the activities of the work plan. And we think this is a great way to not duplicate activities in the council and in this department cross-agency work plan. A second place where there are linkages between this work plan and other planning efforts is does relate to the scaling options report that Barb Yates just presented. That report, as Barb described, is a tool for costing out a quality rating system, and we would view the recommendations coming out of this work plan as broader and more related to the content of a rating system and its standards, but certainly complementary to the scaling options report. And we note throughout the work plan places where we anticipate looking at the scaling options report in detail to help inform the work plan's recommendations. So just turning back to the work plan itself, just to highlight a couple of objectives and activities. First, if you look at objective two, which Karen already described to you a little bit, one of the completed tasks incorporated in that objective two on creating a common set of child outcomes is a recommendation that the departments have already agreed to, which is to recommend the use of the early childhood indicators of progress in Minnesota as that common set of child outcome standards. So that objective we view as completed. And then going forward from there, what we really think is the heart of the work plan is the development of program standards and indicators. And the work plan is providing us with an opportunity to step back and carefully consider what aspects of program quality really will most impact children's educational outcomes. We're doing that in two phases, in Objective 4, which states that we'll create recommendations to we'll develop recommendations to create a framework for a common set of program standards. We're doing that first and foremost by looking back to the 10 essential elements that were developed for and affirmed in the Governor's 2006 Summit on School Readiness. And those research-based elements, I think, really help inform. They have informed the development of the Parent Aware Indicators, but we're in the process of just going back and looking at how those play out across all existing early childhood programs in Minnesota, child care programs, Head Start, school-based pre-K, and taking another look at those and the latest research again that really brings to bear on what quality indicators or program standards most impact the success of children, especially at-risk children.
We have a question.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And if it would be better to just hold this question or your answer till after you're finished, let me know. But in 4B on your work plan, the 10 essential elements, there's a step there called a crosswalk, and I assume that's where you're just trying to matrix all these different sets and see what's common. So we have school readiness standards, Head Start standards, accreditation standards. Preliminary question, how many accrediting organizations or different sets of standards are in that?
Ms. Swenson-Clark.
Madam Chair, Representative Downey, we'll be looking primarily at the accrediting standards for the National Association for the Education of Young Children, which accredits centers,
okay,
and the National Association for Family Child Care Programs, which obviously provides accreditation for licensed family child care associations. There are a number of other accrediting bodies in Minnesota, but those are the that serve programs in Minnesota, but those are the two most commonly used.
Quick follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So have you done that crosswalk, and what have you learned or found? How common are these different standards? It seems problematic to me that we have so many different standards. And then a following question, what did MELF use? What did we use in our QRIS pilot in terms of kind of the framework? And I guess maybe the question behind the question is, how solid is this 10 essential elements, and how solid are the parent aware kind of star ratings and the elements within it at this point?
I'm going to take a quick shot at that. Just to say, Representative Downey, I just want to say that this is something that I said on the Governor's Advisory Council, that we've been requesting this because there are so many different kinds. Is what we understand from Louise Stoney is we need a common set between the tension, how I see it, and you can, is between MDE and DHS. So how do you rate Head Starts, preschool school readiness programs over an MDE, and then you have your child care over in DHS? So we are hoping to have one standard, is what the vision of the legislature would like to see, and that's why we've asked for this and are looking at this, and the governor's advisory council will be looking at this. So Ms. Swenson-Clatt, what is your view of all the different standards and so forth?
Madam Chair and Representative Downey, Karen, you too could jump in here. Where we're at with the development of this crosswalk so far is that there were actually a set of crosswalks done for the Governor's Summit in 2006. So while there haven't been dramatic changes to any of the program elements within each program type, for example, Head Start or child care licensing or public school pre-K, there is some updating that needs to be done. We're also going to be adding to that crosswalk, the parent aware quality rating indicators, and looking again across all of these program types, and I think certainly what we expect to see is that some program types, because of the unique characteristics of the programs, may meet some of the essential elements more strongly or less strongly than others. For example, and again, Karen, you could jump in here. For example, the child care licensing standards in Minnesota may not require as intense services in the area of a comprehensive approach to supporting the child and their whole family as Head Start program performance standards do. So I think the crosswalk will just help us eyeball where there are gaps across the existing program standards and really set, in a sense, a bar for in terms of what at-risk children most need, a set of common program standards across all programs.
So a policy decision might be in some states that MDE sort of works with their programs and DHS works with their programs, and they have their different ways that is structured. So this also crosses into policy here. Ms. Carlson?
I was just going to say that to back up from the crosswalk, I think we have the most confidence in the 10 elements because they have the best research base, and the 10 elements aren't used as standards for anything. They are the 10 things that most impact the best outcomes for the kids least likely to have good outcomes. And so that's the research base we're trying to get. The standards for all these other programs may or may not improve school readiness, but they weren't defined, they weren't set out to improve school readiness necessarily. For example, the child care licensing standards are to, you know, protect the health and safety of the kids when they're in group settings. So it was never articulated that those standards should help improve school readiness. And we have...
And the essential elements come from Arthur Reynolds, right, at the University of Minnesota?
Both Arthur Reynolds and Susan Newman, who nationally did research on programs. Her primary area was literacy. And he had more overall programming, but yeah, they got together and extracted the elements from their pieces of research that made the most difference to at-risk kids.
We're represented down here. I see is the administration, MDE, is purporting, you know, that they like to use the 10 essential elements at the Governor's Advisory Council. So you have the Republican administration that's really endorsing, in my opinion, I mean, you're using those, the 10 essential elements. So it is... It's not just the legislature looking at this, mm-hmm. but the administration. That's their frame. Okay. Are you anything else?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I guess just to wrap up, I think the second phase of work that the work group will be about in Objective 5 relates to moving on from that examination of common program standards to looking at and developing recommendations for what specific measures or indicators would be captured in a quality rating and improvement system. And here, I think we believe that the common program standards will be a guide for us as based on those 10 essential elements, but that we will likely not recommend that every standard be measured in a quality rating system because of cost and other considerations. So there will be a set of trade-offs there as well in terms of how to ensure or how to recommend a quality rating system, a set of indicators that, again, most is impactful on child outcomes set against cost and other feasibility issues as was played out in the scaling options report. You'll also note in both objectives 4 and 5, we're in the midst of reviewing, the latest research, information that is always fast-changing from other states. Looking ahead to summer and fall, we intend to carefully review the results of the ParentAware evaluation and seek input from experts across the country, from the Early Childhood Advisory Council, from the Early Childhood Caucus, and members of the public before we finalize those recommendations. And the tasks in Objective 6 and 7 around plans to link future state and administrative funding to a rating system are just getting underway. I think you could expect that we will describe a range of options under each of those objectives.
Thank you. I think members, when I think about the work we're doing and then the Kellogg report, and then I see this and I think of what the departments are doing, and they're doing a lot of work on this. As evidenced by the report, it looks like they pretty much are going to be following through and evaluating and coming out with recommendations. Looks like about in late next fall or so.
Madam Chair, the recommendations will be coming to you in March of 2011. The timeline on the work plan really lays out a public process through the end, through December, mm-hmm. and then some time for the departments to put that report together and deliver it to you in March.
Well, Ms. Swenson-Clatt, I think the legislature has an interest in getting that before then,
yeah.
So maybe we might look at how we could do that, because we'd like to, if we're going to have legislation, March is too late. So I guess we'll have that conversation offline. But I think it would be difficult for us to think about what bill, if we're going to draft bills, there's going to be action, and then to have this report come out after that. So we'll be in discussions about that.
And Madam Chair, I think when we originally were in discussion with you about that deadline, we were understanding the delivery of the Child Trends Parent Aware Evaluation results to come to us in December. So they've now pushed that back to fall.
Right. So if they've pushed that back, does that mean you push yours back?
I think we'd be happy to talk further about that.
Okay. Well, thank you, because that would be very helpful to us. Thank you. Members, we have one last, we have a bill as our last item. Representative Rosenthal will come and chair on Thursday. We get the governor's budget. You probably know there's significant cuts to child care. And so we'll be walking through those. Come with your questions for the governor's staff. And then next, are we doing quality the week after? Oh, and then we have national speakers the week after that that are in town. But Thursday will be an important meeting. So Representative Rosenthal.
Would you like to move your bill, Representative Slavik?
Okay. Thank you, Representative Chair Rosenthal and members of the committee. Well, now you're getting the baseline members for quality rating, kind of what the legislature's looked at and the financing from Kellogg and the departments and their plan. And then we came down to what could we really do this year in terms of making some kind of progress, because as we all know, it's a bit of a tough year for us here at the legislature. Not a lot of money. Actually, as you know, we're $1.2 billion short with a deficit. So one thing we looked at when you heard, and is Barb Yates still here?
No.
Oh, she had to go. Well, in her report, one of the things she talked about is sort of the repurposing, where you take the federal funds, you take other pots of funds, and you move them towards quality. And this bill is a first step towards that. It would take $500,000 in the federal child care development funds and use them, which are used for grants under Statute 119B, and we use them for providing statewide child care provider training, coaching, consultation, supports to prepare for the voluntary Minnesota quality rating system. So really what we did is we talked to the department about how could we move this forward this year, and then we came to an agreement that we could use some of the federal funds. These are federal funds. You can go, there's a plan online, I think it's online, maybe not, you can get it from the online, that talks about our federal child care funds and how we're going to spend them, and now we could designate this to use for the quality rating system. So it's promising to have some additional money that's really was there anyhow, but now using it for quality, and then to help more providers get ready for that. And I have a testifier here today who's going to talk more in depth about how that would work.
Thank you, Representative Slawick. Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Hold on just 1 second. I move yes. that House File 2760 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Finance and Policy Bill. May you state your name and for the record, please. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Ann McCulley. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Child Care Resource and Referral Network. I have a mouthful. We're a nonprofit agency that was created in 1992. Our role at the network office is to support the system of resource and referral agencies around the state. There are currently 16 agencies, including Barbie Yates, who was here earlier, Resources for Child Caring is one of those, and they support all of the governor's economic development regions. That is our structure that you see on the map, just because we sometimes get questions. The core functions of our system are in state statute, so it's an interesting partnership. We are a nonprofit, but we have funding that comes to us from the Child Care Development Block Grant, particularly the what's called the quality dollars. Each state is asked to set aside 4% of those funds to go towards a broad list of things that are considered quality building, and a proportion of those come through our system. This is just a quick overview of what we do, that we work with. What's unique about our system, I think, that helps both with something like Parent Aware and broadly, is that we work with parents, so we help families to find care and understand the quality choices. We help providers increase their quality. We do that broadly through grants, through education, through opportunities for scholarships, and then we also try to inform legislators, community members, businesses, other folks about the importance of child care to our economy, to school readiness, all the things you've been talking about. For the visual learners in the room, there's the visual version of what we do. I like to provide that one because I myself find it easier to understand. I put all this out there just as context because I think it will be important, as you see, as we talk about what the expectation of this bill provides. A big focus of the work that we do is on, as I said, building quality. And we've already been doing that through a number of methods. I handed out a quick one-pager that comes from our annual report just to give you the waterfront of what we do. So it ranges, as I said, from scholarships, for instance. The TEACH scholarship is something that helps child care providers go back to school and get their degree. We do grants to help programs either bricks and mortar or increase their quality, increase their professional development. And for the last going on 3 years now, we have been what we call the front door for Parent Aware. So we're the first place that providers come who want to get rated to go through the full rating. And as you saw from Catherine Tout's report the other day, we're closing in actually after this cohort on 100 providers who've worked with our provider resource specialists, some of them two and three times now, to walk through that process. And as such, it has really provided us with a good sense of what it is they need before they walk through that door. There are many things where we've stepped back and thought, boy, if we had another 6 months, or if we had a little more time, what would be the tools, the supports, the resources that would have made it that much more likely that they'd be ready? And that's the premise that guides us in thinking about where we would go with these dollars. You saw also in the reports that both Catherine Tout and others have given that the categories that we're using in Parent Aware are broad. Here they are again: family partnerships, teaching materials and strategies, tracking learning, and provider education and training. And we're in this tricky time, as you've just heard, where we're waiting for the final results of the evaluation of those elements to come back, which will tell us more about frequency and combinations of those and what makes the biggest difference. But we feel confident that these categories, in and of themselves, because they're based on research, because they're found in quality rating systems around the country, are categories worth investing in. So starting with these, starting with having providers, for instance, understand where they stand in these categories around the state in advance of any kind of quality rating system coming out is what we're envisioning. And we're doing this through what we propose to be a number of activities. I believe last week Deb Swenson proposed to be a number of activities. I believe last week Deb Swenson Klatt provided you with the building quality one-pager, which I handed out again. And again, this is a mock-up of where we think we're going. I want to be cautious to say that some of these things are not available yet because, of course, it would take the dollar shift, but in order to give you a sense of what we want to be doing. So it starts with the checklist. We talk about doing some additional grants that would be tailored increasingly for meeting these quality elements. We now have the capacity through the ARRA funds to have at least one person in each of the regions you saw on the map available to help providers understand the environment rating scale, go in and coach them and mentor them on that. And then we will also, hopefully by next year when it rolls out, make available as part of this funding either low-cost or free access to some of the key training programs to the Minnesota Child Care Credential. Now, all I have for you at this point for data is what we've been able to gather from the field. You saw some of the comments, and you heard from some of the providers currently in Parent Aware. One thing we do each year as the Resource and Referral System, you may not know this, but we're the system that actually gathers the data from all the providers in the state for the market rate survey. And we also, as part of that, ask providers to answer additional questions if they're willing. Last year, we had over 1,000 providers, actually 1,100 providers do so. We're right in the middle of the survey right now, so all I have is the first 250 providers who have answered. I was on SurveyMonkey this week pulling this for you. We've had 250 providers from 57 counties already answer all of the questions, but one we ask specifically that's new this year is, are you interested in participating in a quality rating improvement system? And these are just some of the quotes that we got from people online who said yes. This first set of quotes deals more with people seeing it as a way to improve their own business. So suggestions to help them improve. I think it will better my business. It helps us recognize our strengths and our weaknesses. I highlighted that last quote. With Parent Aware not being available to us yet, we are always looking for ways to improve our program. So we really do feel, and from the sessions we've been doing with the Early Childhood Caucus around the state and Child Care Works, that while there are some who don't want to do this, there are certainly a lot who are saying, when will it be here? So this opportunity to come out and do some basic getting ready activities we feel would be welcomed. Here are just a few more quotes to get more at the environment and providers themselves recognizing that they need this, they see that this profession needs to get more attention, that they'd like to see more providers taking classes, that it's important to hold up quality standards, and that parents need that information. And then again, this very bottom one, we seem to be in a holding pattern with more emphasis on quality, but without resources to make it happen. This is probably one of the biggest concerns for people who said no, was that they're concerned about not only the time and paperwork, but the funding. These are providers who work on a very, very thin margin. So whatever we do with this funding, we're going to need to make it easily accessible, low cost, and of course it needs to be both culturally competent and appropriate to the different types of child care settings. We know that clearly from our work already in Parent Aware. These are just a few other snapshots I thought I'd give you. Some of these are trends, some are newer, but where are we starting? Since we're talking about helping providers understand curriculum and assessment and working with coaches, so right now, last couple of years, we've asked this question, are you using a curriculum? It's surprising to some, but we have a significant number of providers out there, at least historically, and particularly in family child care, it is less common to have a curriculum that's truly called a curriculum. So we're sitting at about 70% of folks at least saying yes to that, and we're going up a little in the, is it a formally published curriculum? Again, there are many other ways to do curriculum, but it gives us a sense of where are we at on that continuum. We also asked for the last several years, do you use any kind of assessment tool? And we've seen that steadily climbing. Specifically, do you formally track the progress of your children? I know that's a big interest of this committee. And we've seen that slowly going up, but we have a ways to go. Wrap up. Yep, just done. And then finally, this comes from a workforce study that Wilder Research did about 3 years ago, I would say, maybe 4 years ago was the data, so it might be slightly outdated, but it was one of the few times we asked, have you ever even used a mentor or a coach? So you see it's more common among center directors and a lot less common around licensed family child care providers. So we have a ways to go, but there is interest and involvement already. I'll just close with this quote from one of the environment rating scale consultants because I think it sums up nicely. The environment scale consultant's position has breathed new life into many area and child care programs. Providers may seem to be stuck in doing the same thing every day due to a lack of motivation or feel all alone with nowhere to turn. The consultant's ability to come into a home or center with an unbiased, trained eye, assist in creating a plan for change, and then follow up on how well that plan worked has proven to be an outstanding way to support child care providers. It is a relationship-based support where you meet the providers on their turf, offer options, and then let the process unfold. Supported providers are willing to invest time, energy, and money when they are guided to see ways to build a quality program. That's it.
Thank you. I think we have a question. Representative Hamilton.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess maybe this to the department. The $500,000 that we were talking about that you spoke of earlier, what are those funds currently used for? And are they subject to any limitations?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, I can answer, and then Deb, if Deb wants to come down and answer for the department, want me to. Right now, a lot of what you saw on the one pager that that I handed out in terms of grants to providers, training for providers, those are the things that the funds are used for. I think what we're envisioning here, and Deb can add into it, is tailoring those more increasingly towards these elements that truly tie to the quality, to the elements of the quality rating system. So instead of being a broader list of options that are available for those grants, they would tie more closely to those elements, if that makes sense.
I'll just say briefly that, you know, that map that you saw, right now this fund, the funds, if you read the plan, they all go out to these different areas, and Ann McCulley's over the whole system, and then there's a person in each one, and it's all for training of providers now. So it currently is going out for that. Do you want to talk about what exactly is being used for now? And
Mr. Chair and Representative, the funds that are being used for grants under the Minnesota Statute Section 119B21 are for the Child Development Services Grants Program. And I would just affirm how Ann described the program. This is a regional grants program that's been around in Minnesota for a number of years. It's administered by the local R&Rs. And the purposes, as laid out in statute currently, are fairly broad, but would support the use of grants by individual providers for quality improvement activities like purchasing materials, like accessing training, making improvements to a family child care home facility. As we understand this legislation and with the directive here, it would I think more closely target the use of the funds to support providers in accessing those same kinds of resources, but more specifically targeted to helping them prepare for a rating system.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I assume your organization is the recipient of the $500,000. Is this is there a competitive bid process? Did you submit an RFP for this, or how does the actual award work?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, the funding goes out from the Department of Human Services to each of the resource and referral agencies in the state through contract. Those are outlined in statute. The expectations of each resource and referral agency is in statute, and those are outlined. I don't know if you want to say any more about that process, but that's how the dollars get. There's a funding formula that is used, so it looks at the number of child care providers in that area, the number of children in that area, the geographic distance, and then takes that into consideration in terms of how the dollars get allocated to meet the needs of the kids and the providers in that community.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So how does your organization fit into that then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Downey, our organization also receives a contract with the Department of Human Services to coordinate the behind-the-scenes activities and support each of the resource and referral agencies, and then to do certain activities that are statewide. So the website is managed by our office, the online learning program is managed by our office, anything that has to do with statewide delivery of services is managed by our office.
Thank you, Ms. McCulley.
Thank you.
Representative Slavik, do you have any closing words? Dr. Efron, would you like to come down?
Well, members, it's interesting with the way those grants are. I mean, that's they go through the system, and then it's almost like an RFP that they're then doing to their providers, where the providers can access it on that level.
Could you state your name for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Karen Efram. I'm here on behalf of EdWatch to renew our concerns about quality rating systems in general and the use of funds that are not available on either the state or the federal level for this type of program for a whole number of reasons. One, it uses subjective, unreliable, invalid assessments, namely the kindergarten readiness assessment, which are based on vague non-academic outcomes, the quality, the early childhood indicators of progress, which it just amazes me that this state is willing to accept this without any real legislative discussion about these for the youngest, most vulnerable, impressionable citizens in our state, when there was a multi-year, multi-election battle over the K-12 standards, A, and B, this quality rating system is trying to combine the early childhood indicators of progress, the Head Start standards, and multiple other sets of standards, as Representative Downey mentioned, and so that kind of reeks of federal intrusion, which this legislature on a bipartisan basis has soundly rejected on the K-12 level. So I don't understand why you would just willy-nilly accept it for early childhood. And the quality of the Head Start standards obviously isn't very good, because the 600 and however many studies that just came out showed that Head Start can't even show any academic improvement by the end of first grade. So I don't understand why we are trying to spend money we don't have to implement the system. This is a complete government takeover of private and religious child care, when, you know, even though it's touted as voluntary, just like Race to the Top is voluntary, everybody's doing it for the money. That doesn't make a lot of sense either. The providers have to teach these standards that are extremely controversial and deal with issues. A, they're non-academic, and B, they're dealing with issues that are the providence of parents, no matter what your views are on them. We're talking about gender identity and social activism and things that it is the purview of parents to decide, not the state bureaucracy, not a set of groups that have other agendas. It is costly and bureaucratic. It is turning child care providers into assessors, that it isn't necessarily their role to do so.
Dr. Efferman, if you could wrap it up and just spend
sure.
That would be great.
Parents aren't asking for this kind of rating system. There's no data to justify the high cost and intrusiveness. And so, therefore, we continue to renew our concerns and oppose this on multiple levels. Thank you.
Representative Lane.
Well, actually, I'm a little confused as to what program you're speaking to, because the words you're using are so overreaching. We're talking, as far as I can see, about offering parents who need to put their children into childcare some elements, the 10 essential elements of a good program. I don't know where that gets into government takeover, intrusive, telling parents how to do it. I don't know where this all comes from, because the program we're talking about is actually allowing parents to see that this program offers 10 essential elements for good care of their child. I should think that it would be a no-brainer, but we must be looking at two different things.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lane, all the documentation that you have in front of you clearly states that this requires child care providers to implement the early childhood indicators of progress. That has never been formally adopted by the legislature. And it's all being done bureaucratically. And given how much controversy there is about K through 12 standards, I don't understand how you can then turn around and say, oh, here, we'll offshoot our responsibilities to other people and let them implement this. And again, just like Race to the Top, require child care providers to do this in order to receive the money.
Thank you, Dr. Efram. Representative Peterson?
Slowly.
Mr. Chair, can I say one thing? Absolutely. Again, I'll emphasize voluntary. This is all voluntary on the part of the providers, voluntary on the part of the parents. And it seems to me that the whole world is asking for accountability and standards. And we at the legislature are consistently bombarded from the business community, from parents, from the public at large, that we have those kinds of systems in place. Now, what those look like are certainly debatable, but they need to be in place, at least as I'm hearing it from everyone, except I assume you do not want those kinds of systems in place. So that's something I had to say at the end.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Slawik, would you like to say?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion, as well as ask members to look at the bill and become familiar with the federal funds and how it all is done. It's really pretty transparent, and I think this is part of the redirection of money. It takes the first step. It's something, if we do a quality rating system, you would see this happen on a larger degree. So I think this is a really strong first step.
Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.